Hey guys, it's Amelia Joyce, and welcome back to Lessons Learned on Radio Laurier. I hope everyone's having a really good week so far. Today, we're going to be talking about something that maybe you can relate to, or maybe something that you completely can't relate to, and you're just going to have to, I guess, listen to my story slash perspective on it. But that's being young and a parent. We're going to be talking about me being a young mom, which, you know, it can be, you know, a touchy subject for some people, apparently, and can be very, stigmatized, and we're going to get into that. But at first, we're going to just talk about how I even became a young mother, because I became a mother, well, I became pregnant with my daughter Lily when I was 21, and I had a birthday while I was pregnant, so I had her when I was 22, and I'm 27 now, so, like, you know, math, everything. She's almost 5, and it's been a whirlwind and a roller coaster ride, but yeah, we're gonna get into the story though, how I even became a mother at such a young age, because that is a pretty young age in my opinion to become a parent yourself, because I was still living, at the time I was living on my own, but I had just been started living on my own, like it was very recent that I moved out of my parents' house. When I found out I was pregnant, and I was working at a detail shop, like a car wash situation. I was a quality control personnel, and that just means that I, like, check over other employees' cars, and I train them, and delegate, and stuff like that, but yeah, I was basically, my main job, though, was detailing cars, and I was even doing that when I was pregnant, like, and I stopped when I was 8 months pregnant, but I did that for, like, 3 years before that. So, I was just, like, you know, a detailer, and then I found out I was pregnant. And fun fact, which is kind of, like, I guess you could say rare, but I don't know what everyone's perspective is on this, depending on what your perspective is. I didn't have intercourse, like, I didn't have sex until I was 21. So, and yes, that means, yes, I had sex, and then within that year, I got pregnant. is interesting way to, like, start, like, having, like, being sexually active. And, yeah, I met Lily's dad. Like, I knew him from high school. He was a year younger than I was, so he was in my sister's grade, because my sister is only a year younger than me. But we weren't really friends in high school, but then we met outside of high school when I was 20, because we started dating when I was 20, and he, had just turned 19. And then I turned 21 and we officially started dating. Yeah, he was my person that I lost my virginity to. And, yeah, we started living together, like, pretty early on in our relationship, and that's because I was having, like, problems with my parents, and, so it was probably, like, it was pretty rocky, like, just from, like, the get-go, like, there were, like, obviously, like, good moments, but, like, the bad ones just outweighed them, and, like, we really did rush into our relationship, for sure, like, me and her dad and I. We were really young, like, that's really young, and like I said, before that, I was living with my parents up until that point, and I just kind of, like, rushed into this relationship because I thought I, like, was in love with this person, and we started being, like, sexually active, and yeah, and it just went from there, and I just kind of was, like, just, I want to kind of escape my home life. Also, that was a major part of it. Like, I just wasn't having a good time at my parents' house, you know? Like, it wasn't getting better. If anything, it was getting worse, you know? So, like, why would I want to stay when I have an opportunity to go, kind of thing? I didn't expect to get pregnant, but I definitely wasn't, like, preventing it. Like, I was on birth control at some point, but, like, there was some, like, weird thing with appointment times with the doctors, and, like, because I ended up going with his family doctor instead to get the birth control. It was this, like, big thing, but anyways, couldn't get an appointment to re-up my birth control, and I ended up getting pregnant within, like, a month or two after, like, stop taking it. But, like, it wasn't, like, a purposeful thing, like, trying to get pregnant, but, like, I just kept trying to make an appointment, and I couldn't. Anyways, so I ended up getting pregnant, and, like, that just, like, that seems like such, like, a lame thing, like, to say, like, how I got pregnant that way, but, like, that's literally what happened, which is, you know, I was very young finding out this, that I was pregnant, and I remember, yeah, so the way I found out, because I was at work, and I randomly, like, just vomited, like, just full-on vomited, and, like, people were kind of, like, whatever, like, questioning it, but kind of, like, you know, people get sick, like, sometimes, you know, whatever. But it was right after my shift, so it's not like I had, like, I was going home anyways, but I remember going into the staff room and just, not even, like, for any sort of scent, like, that wasn't really my thing, it was just random, like, completely, just, like, I just walked into a room, and she's like, oh, I'm just gonna vomit now, just because that's life. And I ended up going home, I ended up telling, like, I obviously had to tell my, you know, people that I worked with that I had vomited in the staff room, and I told them I was gonna clean it up, so I did, and I cleaned up my vomit, you know, whatever, and then went home on the bus, and I was living by myself at that point, because me and him had broken up, by the way, like I said, we weren't really a good, like, healthy relationship. It was very toxic, and yeah, he ended up, like, having to leave because I told him to leave, slash, like, he, like, you know, wanted to do his own thing, and I told him I didn't want him around anyways, and yeah, it was just, like, very toxic because we were already fighting, and it was just a bad time. So, I was living by myself in, like, this bachelor apartment that we were originally living in together, and so I went home to that place, and I bought 2 pregnancy tests from Shoppers Drug Mart, and I called my sister and told her to come over so I could take these said pregnancy tests, and I took one, and I literally came out of the bathroom and threw the pregnancy test at my sister, and she's like, oh my god. So I took the second one because I have a lot of pee, and I took the second one, and it was also pregnant, it was positive. So I called, like, the pregnancy resource center in my area, and I walked down there with my sister after we talked to them on the phone. But, like, if anyone has ever seen, like, a positive pregnancy, like, sign before on, like, a pregnancy test, you basically know in your head what you're gonna do already, like, no matter what anyone else says around you, no matter what anyone else does to convince you or say whatever, you already know, looking at that stick, what you're gonna do. Okay, it's just like, I feel like you just know it in your gut, your soul, whatever, your heart. And I knew that I wanted to keep her, because of, like, since I was a child, I've always wanted to be a mom, and I always thought about being a mom, and, like, always wanted my, like, own child to raise and have a family. Like, didn't even really matter about the partner, really. That wasn't really, like, you know, it was, like, an expectation at one point for me, but that, like, I've always wanted to be a mom since I was a kid, and I don't know if it was watching movies and TV shows that made me, or whatever, just a lot of them, because I watched a lot of them when I was younger. And maybe just that, and, like, but also wanting to be the mom and getting to take care of, because I know I wasn't really, like, truly getting, like, 100% taken care of in all aspects, if that makes sense. So I knew I wanted to give that care to someone else who is my DNA, you know, my child. And I knew I could be a really good mom one day. And I think I've achieved that, you know, depending on the day. But I think I've achieved that overall because I feel that way and I feel like, you know, we have that. I love her so much, you know, she's my absolute universe. I think about her, like, over everything, you know? And, yeah, I always wanted to be a mom. So, like, I just knew. And so I called Pregnancy Resource Center, and I was like, you know what, and, like, the Pregnancy Resource Center, if you don't know, it is, like, it's basically someone, like, you can talk to someone about what, like, options are, essentially, and, like, they, you know, give you the options and all the information and everything, and they have, like, even, like, a room that has, like, supplies for babies and stuff, and, like, it's just, like, a really good place to go to if you're pregnant. So I went there with my sister, and I talked to someone there, but, like, before that, I talked to him on the phone. I was like, I already know what I'm gonna do, I think, but I'm gonna come down there just to talk to someone, because I don't really know. I'm young. Like, I'm 21. I don't really know what I'm doing. I work at a car wash. Like, you know. Yeah. So, like, I need someone to talk to about this, because I don't really know anything about being pregnant or anything, and I've taken two tests just now in the last 10 minutes, and they both say positive. So, me and my sister walked down there. It's not that far of a walk. I think it was, like, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, okay. We walk down there and we talk to someone. We also take a test while we're there because they have tests that you can do there. And I take a test there because, like I said, I had a lot of pee. And take a test there. It's also positive. What a coincidence. And I talk to someone there about my pregnancy and, you know, all the options. And they tell me to go to my family doctor about it, because that's the best solution there is, especially to get an ultrasound, because I've only taken, like, just pee tests, and I need to get, like, a blood test /, like, an ultrasound to see if there's a baby in there, because pee tests can only go so far for accuracy. And it turns out, so I went to my family doctor, right? And, yeah, it turns out I went for an ultrasound. I was, like, 6 weeks and 5 days, I remember, when I got the ultrasound done. There was a baby in there. Heartbeat. And she looked like a little gummy bear. It was so cute. And, yeah, I just knew that I wanted to keep her even though I was so young. And, like, even though I was broken up with the person that I was impregnated with at the time. And I remember calling him up. And was like, okay, I need to tell you something. And he was like, okay. And I was like, okay, you need to sit down. He's like, okay. And I told him I was pregnant. And, like, he didn't really believe me. I feel like it's just, like, maybe just, like, kind of like a defense mechanism, or like just like a classic response, I'm not really sure, but he really didn't believe me at first on the phone, and he thought I was just like trying to, like, I don't know, like, get him back. And I was like, I really don't want that though, like, I you know, like, at the time I was just like kind of done, you know, whatever. And like, I'm like, that's, I would never do that kind of thing. Also, that's just kind of like really strange to me that someone would ever do that. And, you know, he hangs up the phone and he goes to talk to his parents, that he's like, that's why he hangs up. He says he wants to talk to his parents about it. I'm like, okay. So I hang up and he calls me back like a few minutes later. And I ask him, you know, what did his parents say? And he completely lies to me, and I find out this later. Well, slash, like, I just kind of knew it at the time. I even called him out on it. He's I'm like, what did your parents say about me being pregnant? And he's like, they basically, like, beg you to get an abortion. I'm like, no, like, I know your parents, because I lived with his parents at one point. Like, I know your parents, like, they're against it. Like, I'm like, they would never say that. And he just kind of goes silent. And yeah, I found out later that wasn't true, because they would never say that. Like, that's just, like, horrible. And he just honestly wants me to get one at first. Like, his first thing, because he has already, like, since he's, like, we've broken up, has moved on to a different person, different, like, lifestyle, whatever, like, partying, drinking, whatever. And he doesn't want to ruin that, I guess. And he's basically begging me to get one. And I was like, no, like, I don't think so. Like, and even his brother at one point, was messaging me and begging me to try and get me to get one. Both him and his brother were trying to convince me to get one. And like I said earlier, when you look at the stick, you just kind of know what you want to do. I remember his brother saying, like, it would mess up everyone's life. And I was like, actually, it would, like, bring love into, like unconditional love to all of our lives, including yours. But okay. And now he knows that's true, and so does everyone else. But, like, at that time, like, he was just kind of scared for his brother, because that was only 6 weeks. It's kind of, like, a shocking thing, especially because he was only, I think, yeah, he was 19 or 20. No, he was 20. Yeah, he had just turned 20. So it's this very scary thing. And I was 21. So, like, I understand being, like, really scared. But, like, it definitely hurt, for someone to tell you to get one, obviously. Especially when you already, like, know that you shouldn't and you want to keep it and blah, blah, blah. You've already made the decision in your head. But eventually her dad did call me, like, when I was at work one day, and he, like, apologized for all of that, and he, like, said that, like, you know, he talked to his parents, and, like, you know, he doesn't want me to get an abortion. He was just kind of, like, you know, didn't know why he said that, and he was kind of, like, shocked or whatever. I ended up, like, we ended up getting back together after a little bit, when I was pregnant, and through a little bit of her life as well. So, because I am a very, very, very forgiving individual, unfortunately. And even at one point in my pregnancy, in pregnancies, you have to do an STD test, okay? And I love this story so much. So like I said earlier, when we broken up, when I was working at the car wash and living by myself, he had moved on to another life or whatever person, what have you. And I find out, because you have to do an STD test when you're pregnant, just to make sure the baby will be okay when, you know, you're giving birth, labor, all that stuff. And I find out, because I have to do all of them, I find out from my midwife. She calls me up, she leaves a message, and then I call her back. I'm at work when I call her back. I, like, go into the break room, and I call my midwife back. And she tells me, I think I was 5 months pregnant, she tells me that I have chlamydia. And by the way, like I said, he was my only sexual partner that I've ever had. So I knew who I got it from. Like, there was no question about it, you know? And I was just like, and I heard that from my midwife, like, you have chlamydia. And I was like, what? Like, what a roller coaster ride to go through, right? And especially at work. And she's like, I'm like, so what do we do from here? And she's like, well, basically, we need to treat the chlamydia, because if we don't treat the chlamydia, when you give birth, the baby could be born blind. or could have complications in other ways. And I was like, excuse me, ma'am, what? Yeah, we need to cure them. Like, yeah. So you have to take like horse pills to cure chlamydia. I think like you have to take like twice. And he also has to take it. And anyone else who like he's had sex with, whatever, has to be told and blah, blah, blah. And that's what happened. And what happened after I got off the phone with my midwife, I call him and I leave a message because she didn't answer. And, or whatever, like something like that, or like left a voice note. And I said, I think I just texted him actually. And I just said like, hey, I just got the results from my midwife about my STD test. And then I had to go back to work, so I just, like, put my phone down in the break room. And as I'm working, I guess apparently he was blowing on my phone, and then eventually I get paged to the office because he called the work number. And I call him, I'm sitting in the office, like, on line two or something. And he's, like, I think it was line three. Yeah, it was line three. And he's like, yo, you're scaring me. Like, you texted me saying that you got your results of your STD test, and then you don't reply. I'm like, I'm at work. I can't reply. Like, I'm not allowed with my phone. And he's like, okay, well, what did she say? And I told him that, you know, I had chlamydia. And he's like, okay. And I was like, and you know what that means, right? You're the only person that I've had sex with, so I know I got it from you. And he's like, okay, oh. And I was like, yeah. And, you know, he asks about the baby and stuff, and, like, he's really worried and feels really bad. And, you know, honestly, he should feel kind of bad, you know, in that situation. And he had to tell the people in the other situation about it, also, you know, the people that he entangled with, about it, and he just felt horrible, but, like, I didn't want to make him feel guilty, but we just had to get it, like, cured, and he had to get cured, and, like, it was a bad time. It was, a bad, like, roller coaster to go through, especially when pregnant, you know, you're already, like, an emotional person, like, and I went through, you know, just that, like, I dated him my whole pregnancy, worked at the car wash until I couldn't, basically, and then I had her, it was 36-hour labor, my water broke at first, and then I didn't get contractions until the next day, so my water was just constantly breaking for, like, a day, and I didn't get contractions until 4 a.m., so my water broke at 1 p.m. I didn't get contractions till 4 a.m. Then I went in at 8 a.m. at the hospital. Then I got an epidural at noon when I was 3 centimeters. Okay. And I was in extreme pain, like feeling all contractions up until, like, from 4 a.m. up until noon. Okay. And contractions, never felt them. They are not the greatest thing in the world. And, like, literally at some points my body was, like, shaking. It was so bad. And I actually vomited. At one point, it was so bad, because they were like, go for a walk, and up, like, down the hallway, and I was like, okay, bleh. And, like, couldn't even get, like, down the hallway, and then I got my epidural when I was 3 centimeters dilated, which means that you're allowed to get your epidural at that point, because to have a baby, you have to be 10 centimeters, and at that point, when I was at noon, and I had already, my water broken the previous day, I'd already been in labor for a day at that point. And I just got an epidural. So it was already 24 hours. And then I had to lay in bed because you can't walk anymore at that point. And then I had to have a liquid lunch. And then it ended up vomiting up my liquid lunch. And they had to give me gravel after that. But I had to basically lie in bed until I was 10 centimeters dilated. And that didn't happen until 7 p.m. So I basically lay in bed for 7 hours with my epidural in, And then I had to start pushing when it was time, which is 7 p.m. So yeah, I was in labor for 36 hours almost, 34 hours. And so I started pushing at 7 p.m. She did not come out. I had to push for like almost 4 hours. And then they're like, all right, if she doesn't come out soon, we have to do a C-section. And they even prep me with questions for a C-section and everything like that. And then they're like, and then the doctor asked me if, because I had a midwife and a doctor, because I had an epidural, so they had to do that. The doctor asked me if I want to try the vacuum, which is like this machine that helps get the baby's head out of my, hole. And I was like, yeah, let's try that, because I really don't really want to go through like the trauma of a C-section, like the aftermath. Because it's not fun. I actually ended up rooming with someone who had a C-section, and I really glad I didn't, because hers was didn't look fun aftermath. But anyways, the vacuum worked because I was pushing for 4 hours, guys. So it's like around 11 p.m. She was born at 11:01, and the vacuum worked. I had 6 stitches, so I did tear a little. It's okay though; everyone tears usually. But she came out. She was 8 pounds, 15 ounces. She was almost 9 pounds. She's a big baby. She was a week early. She came at 39 weeks, and my water broke. And she was still almost 9 pounds. So like that's weird, but whatever. Maybe like sometimes the dates are off. But it was definitely a big baby, and I had to push for a long time, and even had to get a vacuum involved apparently. So that's cool. But she was a beautiful child. Beautifully beautiful child. And yeah, I was, and I forgot to mention this, but at one point when I was pregnant, I asked my parents if I could move back in with them. And because I like just financially and everything. And like my mom said that like she would support me and like we'd be in this together and all this stuff. And like at one point my father went into the hospital because of his stroke and seizure, and just it wasn't looking very well for him, and he was in ICU at one point, and then he went into a Freeport like rehabilitation center. So at, like a lot of points in my pregnancy, my father was in the hospital. So like it was the main focus on that, and like wasn't even like really a happy time at my house. And I was living there, and I was pregnant. It was just kind of like dreary, and my mom was like really depressed. Or she wasn't there; she was visiting him, kind of thing. It was a lot. It was a really intense time during my pregnancy. And but after I had her, it was a little bit like more cheery. 'Cause my baby was there, and I like breastfed for a little bit, and also like did formula and breastfed for both for a bit, and eventually just switched to formula. So I did all three kind of thing at some points. Tried all of them. At 3 weeks, when Lily was 3 weeks old, my mom kicked me and Lily out because things that Zach did, well, Lily's dad did, that's his name. He like stole money from my mom. And my mom has a very bad temper, and she's a very like heat of the moment kind of person. And she just, like, I don't know, she didn't really, I guess she maybe even forgot in the moment that I had a baby. I don't really know. But yeah, Lily was 3 weeks old, and yeah, she kicked me and Lily out. And even like I called my aunt, and I like, basically begged her to live there for a bit while I looked for a place. I ended up finding a place, but like after like a month. So that was good. But yeah, it was just really intense. And even like after I called my aunt called my mom, and then my mom comes in my room while I'm packing. And she's like, let's just calm down, and like just completely like tr like 180 of emotions. being like, let's just talk about this tomorrow, like, you don't have to go, like, just stay, da, 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 like, realizing that, you know, I have a baby, you know, realizing that she's kicking not only me out, but my daughter out as well. And I was like, no. Because, like, I was already not having a good time, you know, with, like, living there. And not even just, like, the whole, like, you know, my dad's health problems. But, like, how my mom is treating me about that. Like, she would always, like, belittle me for not visiting the hospital. Even though I worked and was pregnant at the time. I couldn't even be in ICU when I was pregnant at all. I wasn't supposed to be. And she would belittle me. And it was hard for me to see him like that, especially being pregnant myself. It was very emotional for me. Like, so every time I would visit him, I would, like, bawl my eyes out, right? And it was just, like, not a good time. And my mom would make me feel really, like, guilty for it. And she would, like, yeah, she would just emotionally abuse me, even though I was an adult and, like, pregnant at her house. It was really bad. And, like, her addictions were obviously prevalent, but that's not even, like, the issue, really. It's the emotional abuse that comes with it, I guess. So when she came back in that room and was like, you know, let's talk about this tomorrow, blah, 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 I was like, no way. I'm getting out now. Like, you've been doing this my entire life. Like, if you've been listening to my podcast, you know that this is just, like, a reoccurring thing. And I was like, this is my out. Like, I need to get out. I need to get, like, my daughter out of this environment situation, you know, whatever. I can't keep living this cycle where I'm, like, on edge and, like, constantly worried about what you're going to do, what you're going to say to me, how you're going to make me feel about myself, how are you going to make me feel in general about, like, life, your opinions. And, like, I don't even trust your opinion or, like, value it, really, you know. I think that's irrelevant. Honestly, it's, like, honestly laughable. And, like, I'm sick of dealing with the toxicity because you think you're helping me and, like, get validation from helping me in some way. And, like, I'm not going to be your scapegoat to validation anymore, kind of thing. So when I just said no. And then I lived with my aunt, and, like, me and Lily and I lived with my aunt for, like, a month. And then I found a place in Kitchener. And Zach moved there, too. And it was a 2-bedroom in Kitchener. And, it was a lot. Me and Zach, Lily's dad and I, we lived together before, right? And, like, it had already ended up in, like, shambles. And then we lived together again with a baby. And I ended up breaking up with him 8 months into Lily's life. And, like, when people ask me why, it's really hard to, like, narrow it down because there's a long list. And that's not even being mean. There was just, like, a red flag after red flag and just, like, horrible things that were done and said to me over and over again. And just, like, daily life was horrible with this person, honestly. It just wasn't a good time. I wasn't happy in my relationship. And he just kept doing things almost so I would break up with him. And he honestly admitted to me later that, honestly, he was doing everything so I would break up with him because I was so in love with him, I guess. Because he was the person that I baby with. He was, like, my first love kind of thing. So it was very hard to let go of, like, him. But, like, as soon as it got to a point where I was just, like, not bowing even myself, I knew I had to, like, be done with it. And he just, yeah, he was cheating on me and was very emotionally abusive, very financially abusive. I was paying rent fully by myself. I was paying the bills by myself. He would be in and out of work, and I was on EI and, like, baby bonus, so I was paying all of the rent. Because, like I said, I was working at a car wash before, so I had that EI. And we were all living off that, and it was just, he was barely contributing anything, and I was doing all the parental work and the housework and like providing for us as well, like being the breadwinner essentially, all wrapped into one. And it shouldn't be like that, you know. It should be like an equal partnership, in my opinion, you know. And it was just, and that's how I went into the shelter system, was that situation. Not only getting kicked out of my mom's house, but also then having to kick out someone out of my that relationship, and then not being able to afford it on my own eventually, like, because, you know, bills pile up after a while, and it's a two-bedroom apartment that I'm trying to pay for by myself, and there's zero person contributing at all. Built up after a while, so I had to put me and Lily into, like, a safe environment, because it was, like, getting to a point where hydro was being cut off sometimes, you know? It just wasn't good. I wasn't able to afford food for myself. I was personally living off tap water. I would buy the baby food and the diapers and the wipes for Lil and the formula. No, she wasn't on formula then. She was on Homo milk because she was 14 months old when we went in there. I'd buy the Homo milk. I would buy the baby food and I would buy some food for myself, but that food would run out. But I was always stocked on baby food. And so at one point I was living off tap water and I just knew it wasn't like safe or healthy or anything like that. So I knew I needed to get us into a safe environment. So I went, put us into the shelter system. I didn't think we were going to be in it for 3 years, but here we are. And I quickly learned, because I really didn't know it up until this point, that there is like a social stigma and stereotype around being a young mom. Because these shelters that I lived in, mainly it is like young mothers and even younger than I am, and some are older, but I'm kind of like the median range at the time. I was 23 at that point, and I quickly realized that people have this kind of image of a young mom, and there is a lot of children, and I didn't even realize this, but there are a lot of children that aren't getting raised by their actual parents, but they're getting raised by their grandparents. And I didn't even realize that was like a common thing, really. Like, I knew some people did, but like, I didn't realize it was as common as it is, but it really is really common. And I didn't realize it until going into that system. And people have this kind of like image that, I don't know, we're reckless. And, there's even kind of like a stereotype that we don't put our kids first, and like, you know, and there are some women that, you know, do try to live the party lifestyle, and, you know, living in your 20s, or you're even some of them are in their teens, being in your 20s though, and still wanting to, you know, be young and, you know, go out, and but you can't do that really, you know, and do that every weekend and be a mom, like a good, like emotionally available, physically there mother figure, if you're trying to do that lifestyle as well. Like, it's very hard to, because you're not really like putting your child's needs first, you're putting your needs first, you know. And I kind of had to decipher, you know, like, you know, which life do you really want to live? Because I've watched people, other mothers in the shelter system, try to live both. Or just, you know, try to live the other lifestyle completely, and then, you know, have their child being raised by their grandparents. And, you know, maybe that is the best thing in some situations, depending on the situation. And there's some people who want to get out of that lifestyle, but just are, like, still craving it sometimes. And, you know, have, like, kind of, like, an addiction to that party life. Or, like, you know, social life, I guess you could say. And it is a social, like, thing. And I understand, like, wanting to be social and, like, you know, have a good time. And have fun with your friends and stuff like that. But that, like, that's one thing, like, having fun with your friends is one thing, but, like, making it, like, an, like, I need it. I need it every weekend. I need it to survive kind of thing. And making an apparent thing and a known thing that you like to get messed up and party or whatever. Like, that's a completely another thing, being a mother, you know? I just don't think, like, priorities-wise, it's just, like, not what I see as it, like, being an emotionally and physically available mother. And, like, it's hard for a lot of women to kind of, like, steer away from that. And I didn't realize that there was this stigma that all young mothers are like this, that all young mothers have, like, a party problem where they're still, I don't know, like, very young-minded and immature and also are, like, seeking out love, like, constantly. And it sucks to, like, kind of be, like, looked at as that's the image of a young mother, because I'm not really like that at all. And it sucked when people would look at me as a young mom and kind of, like, just kind of stereotype me, really. And even, like, at the library or, like, at an earlier center, like, what, like, anything. In the shelter system, people look at you and they assume that you're one thing just by how you look. How, like, whatever. How they perceive you. And it sucks being stereotyped that way. And there's social stigma towards you when they don't even really know you, without even talking to you, really, you know, getting to know you, that you're a certain way. And it's hard to convince people sometimes of that, that you're not that way, that you really do put your child first, and it's hard to honestly kind of explain to some people that, like, why I'm so adamant on putting my child first, and, like, not wanting to, like, party. Like, I just don't crave it. I just don't. I would rather spend time with my child and, like, do things with her than party. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me as a person, like, as an individual myself. But there is, like, a stereotype for someone who's young and, like, a mom, for some reason, a young mom, like, is stereotype as someone who is, like, reckless for some reason, and just, like, not a good mother, I guess. Like, I feel like people think that if you're young and a mom that you're, not a good mom automatically. I mean, I just don't think that's true. It's some true in some cases, of course, but, like, you can't just, like, label all young moms as being not adequate parents, you know. There are some of us who are intelligent beings and think of emotional needs and, you know, think about the perception of a child, and actually want to be a good parental figure, at least try to be, you know, and try to instill kindness into them. There are some of us in our 20s who want to instill goodness into children. The sucky part is, like, seeing someone who really, you know, loves their children, really wants to be a good parent, you know, but they still crave the lifestyle on top of that, though. And it's hard to kind of, like, flip-flop between the two. I've seen people try to flip-flop between the two, and it just gets really messy trying to flip-flop between the two, you know. It gets intertwined. Usually the two get intertwined. And when it gets intertwined, that's when it gets messy, right? When those two lifestyles clash. And your child can get affected by that. And I've seen it. And that's when it can get messy, is when the child sees any of the bad or negative effects from the other part of you or part of your life, I guess. And for me, I don't have a backup plan like Lily's grandparents, my parents, or even her other grandparents raising her. I don't have that backup plan. Like, a lot of people do have that backup plan where, like, if something were to happen to me, you know, shoot, like, whatever. I don't have that plan because it's not an option. she would not be able to, like, to go to my parents' house. Like, she wouldn't be safe to go to my parents' house. And I don't think a social services worker walking into a place like that, let's just say, for example, I die, whatever. And they have to, you know, put her into a house, you know, to keep her safe while they deal with my body, whatever. I don't know. I'm thinking worst case scenario, guys. I'm trying to think of a situation where, but they wouldn't be able to put her at my parents' house because they would walk in there and I don't think they would deem it as a place that she should be. And also people that I know and who are around me would deem the same thing. And even like family members of mine would say the same thing, that she should probably go to another household. And I don't have an option like that where it's like, oh, my parents can just raise her or go there or whatever when I'm don't feel like being a parent or whatever. Like, I don't have that. I need to babysit when I go to the grocery store. Like, I don't have any of that. I don't even have someone to call when I run out of milk. Okay. I have friends. But I mean, you know, a grandparent for anything, no financial support or emotional support or parental support, anything anything helicoptering me is not a thing. I'm just kind of winging it as a parent, essentially. Should I be? I mean, I've had a lot of support and guidance, and I've seeked out a lot of healing and stuff. And people seem to deem me fit, so that's cool. People tell me that I'm a good mom, so that's cool. My kid tells me that I'm a good mom, so that's the most important thing, you know. Even though I have no help or support, my kid and other people still see me as a great mother. Even though I am young and I'm a mother, no drama, you know, on TikTok, if anyone watches TikTok, you know, I'm a mother, no drama. Even though, I don't have, you know, that family support where I can call on someone, and I feel, so, happy for the people who do, for the people who have, for the young mothers, or just mothers in general, but especially young mothers, and if you're a single mom, I really, really am in awe. I'm in awe of when they have their parents helping them raise their kids. And it's not even a bad awe. It's a good awe. It's a wow, I can't believe you have such good parents because I wish kind of thing. Sounds really bad. But I wish I had my parents to help me healthily and not in a toxic way. And want to help in a healthy way also. And be emotionally and physically there for me and my child, but it just deemed not possible. It's been deemed not possible again and again also. So, and I am in awe of it because I honestly wish it was a thing. I wish I had healthy parents, like some people that I even know, to call on when I need a bag of milk. But it's cool to say that I'm doing it on my own and that I don't have someone to call on, that I don't have support, whatever. It's cool and all, but it'd be cool also that if I had healthy parents, that would be dope, but I don't. And what I do appreciate about myself is that, I don't know. I like being the mom life versus I've been talking about the life, quote unquote, versus being a mom life, basically where you're just geared towards your child all the time, which is literally how I live my life. I'm literally geared towards her, needs and wants, like, constantly, all day, every day. That's just, like, my mantra. And for some people, it isn't like that, and that's okay, you know, and they have a different relationship with their child, and that's okay, you know. It's what role you want in your child's life kind of thing. But for me, it just, like, it's kind of, like, one or the other for me when it came down to being a mom. With, like, would I live the life where I'm just living like I'm still in my 20s still? Or would I live the life of being a mom, you know? Really being there for her and making sure she knows that she's loved and cared for and wanted and needed and and everything, you know? Just, like, completely cared for by me. I was either one or the other, and I want, and it was either full tilt either way. For me, like, I wanted to try hard, and I've tried my hardest at it. She's almost 5 and she's still alive. So that's, there you go. I mean, and people say that she's a really kind and polite child, and she's funny, and she's really silly. She's really smart. And she loves to dance and sing, and she loves to play doctor also. And she says she wants to be a ballerina doctor. So there's that. And I told her she could do both. And she's like, how can I do both? And I'm like, oh, it's possible. It's 100% possible you could be a ballerina and be a doctor. And she's like, how? And I'm like, I'll explain it to you when you're a little bit older and you understand. I tried to explain it to her, and she was just like, yeah, I don't understand. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. You'll get there. You'll get there. And, like, it's such a difficult thing. I'm honestly, like, as much as it's worth it, she's so worth it. Like I said, I've always wanted to be a mom, and, like, she's honestly better than I thought my child would be. Like, when you think about what your child's going to be like, personality wise, like, when you're pregnant especially, you think about, like, well, I wonder what they're gonna be like, and I wonder what they're gonna do, and, you know, what they're gonna say, and, like, how they're gonna act, and you just think about, like, everything. And she's better than what I imagined, and, like, that's just, like, not even me trying to, like, be like, my kid is the best, but, like, my kid is the best. And I just, like, I don't know, I just think of her as, like, on a pedestal. And that she could literally do anything she wants to, because she's just so, like, bright and, like, just full of life and, like, has good intent, as much as a 4-year-old can, you know? And she's very kind. And, like, honestly, that's all I really wanted her to be, was just try to be kind to others. And, like, everyone has, like, you know, their days and moments and all that stuff, but, like, overall, like, she's a very nice person and a good friend to others, and, like, I'm really thankful for that. And, like, it's, but it, I'm not, like, as much as all that beautiful stuff I just said, okay, it is a very hard thing to do, though. It's very difficult, especially, like I said, doing it completely on my own, where I don't have, like, a whole village to help me. I have a select few friends that help me, and that's it. But I don't have family members to help me raise her, or, like I said, watch her when I go to the grocery store. I usually do it when she, during school hours, because she doesn't really, not, she gets bored at the grocery store. And, like, it's awesome being, like, her parent and, like, being her caregiver and the person that she is with when she's not in school all the time. Like, it's awesome. And, like, but I was in a shelter system, guys. Like, it was a difficult, difficult trials and tribulations that I had to go through to even get here. And that's all because I didn't have, you know, family support or someone to go to or someone to, you know, help me with this baby. Even my partner, like, couldn't, like, wasn't even ready to help me with the baby. And I don't think my parents were really ready to help me with the baby, because most of my time being pregnant, my dad was in the hospital. And my dad's disabled also. So he couldn't help me if he tried. And my mom, she just had been spiraling that whole time. So there was, I don't think she emotionally or mentally, physically could have helped me. Financially, they can't help me. So that's why we had to be in the shelter system, because like my family can't help me. And I had to kind of climb my way out of the sewage. You know, okay, have ever, if you've read the book or seen the movie The Shawshank Redemption, that's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's excellent. It has Morgan Freeman in it. You should watch it. Basically, this man digs a hole, a tunnel, really, in, like, out of, because he's in jail, and he digs a hole behind this poster that he has in his room, basically to escape jail, because he's wrongfully convicted of a crime, a murder, actually, of his wife, and he's in there for, like, you know, for life, and he slowly digs a hole, a tunnel, out of jail to get free. But in order to do that, he has to basically climb through sewage, like the sewage line, so like everyone's poop, in order to get out on the other side. And like, you see him climb through this disgusting, like, sewage tunnel, and he like he's vomiting, you know, like, you know, it's just like not a good time. And like, he has to climb down this big thing, and it's raining when he gets out, and he finally gets out of that disgusting sewage tunnel, and he just like rips off his clothes and just like, you know, puts his hands in the air and just like lets it, the rain like come down on him, and he's finally free from prison. And like, that's kind of how I felt when I finally landed this place I have right now. Literally Shawshank Redemption, coming out of the sewage tunnel, and then, you know, him walking up to Morgan Freeman on the beach and being like, what up? That's me right now. But it took so long to get here, and such a difficult process to get here, especially doing it alone. And like, I would definitely recommend waiting to like have children later in life. Like, I feel like you'd be more like prepared, like mentally, emotionally, and financially when you're in your 30s to have children. I feel like it's just be more stable for a child to be in an environment when they're in their 30s, because when you're in your 20s, like I said, a lot of people are still kind of like reckless, and also hanging out with reckless people and like people who are in their 20s. And like, I don't know, I just feel like it'd be more stable to have children in your 30s. And I had a child in my 20s, but that's okay. But I've learned that like, people who have like this timeline in their head, you know, of like, they're like, oh, I want to have children before I'm 30 or 35. And that is, you know, because of, like, our reproduction system, honestly. And, like, I understand that. But I feel like it's better to wait as long as possible. Because even if you think that your, like, clock is ticking, which I find out from Sex and the City, the series, by the way, that's not a thing. And you can be as old as you want and have children, or not have children, or not be married and just be boss, you know, a boss, B-I-T-C-H, you know, just be comfortable with yourself, and, like, truly love yourself, and, like, you don't really need anyone but yourself at the end of the day. And, like, it's cool to have children or not, and what age, it doesn't matter, and there's no really timeline, and I feel like when people think of it as a timeline, that's when it gets warped, and that's when you feel pressure on yourself. And especially when you see, like, you know, Facebook or Twitter or Instagram full of children, and, you know, people from your high school having kids, and, like, it can be a lot of pressure. And also the ticking timeline in your head. And like I said, having experienced it, and thinking I was going to do it with another, like, guys, I went into it thinking I was going to do it not alone. So I, like, remember I, like, got back together with him and everything like that, like, you know? So I was thinking I was going to not do it alone, ended up doing it alone, and it was very difficult, and I would much rather be more, like, knowing I would be stable in my 30s having this child, but, like, everything happens for a reason. I'm just saying, like, I just think it's very silly when people see it as a ticking time bomb when they're 30, but they have to have kids before that. It's just, like, think about the emotional state you're in right now and the financial state you're in right now. Like, are you really ready to have a child and be stable yourself and have all the things you want and all the things it wants? Not it, but he or she, but you know what I mean? Like, are you, like, ready for all of that where you're not going to be struggling at all? Like, struggling at all, as much as babies are cute and having children is, like, a really bonding and, like, positive experience. If you're struggling financially or emotionally, it can be very, like, draining. As much as you love them, you know, if you're struggling with all the other aspects, it's, like, can be not a good experience in that aspect, but good experience parenting wise is kind of, like, twisted. And I would really, like, I want people to know that there really is no timeline and that you shouldn't really think of it, your life, as a timeline. And that you have to do things by a certain age, or, like, I just think it's so silly, or be with someone. I'm single and I'm perfectly okay with that. Like, you know, like, completely okay with it. Cause I'm happy with myself and my life and, like, who I am and, like, what I know I have, like, skill and talent wise, you know, I know, and I'm a good person and good character, and, like, I have that, and I'm comfortable with myself and my own company, and, like, I don't see fulfillment in, like, I guess, like, relationships or the party lifestyle, essentially, being in my 20s lifestyle, I guess. And I wouldn't trade this life for the world, like, being a mom, being Lily's mom. Like, Lily Marie is the most angelic creature on this earth, and I brought her in this world. Like, I get to be her mom. Like, that's so the best feeling ever. Like, she is so amazing, and I'm the one who is, like, everyone's like, that's Lily's mom, you know what I mean? Like, when she's in JK, and, like, they're like, that's Lily's mom, she looks exactly like her. Someone said that to us the other day. I'm like, yeah, I know. People say that all the time because we're literally twins, apparently. I love it. I love being known as Lily's mom. It's literally the best feeling in the entire world, and I wouldn't trade it for any other life. Like, it's just so great. And as much as it is great, though, like, it's very difficult. And I'm slowly reaching my 30s. And I know my 30s, I think I'm going to thrive, you know, because I just have, like, a really strong mindset, like, being 27 now. And my daughter's going to be turning 5 this year, and I feel like I have so much more to give to the world and to give to myself and to Lily, and, like, it's only up from here, you know? And I really like being a mom, as much as there is a stereotype surrounding me and that people look at me a certain way, even on, like, you know, the bus or the sidewalk, they look at me with my jean jacket and they're like, oh, okay. You know, they give me looks, but that's okay. You can give me looks, but I still know that I'm a good person, that I'm a good mom. So that doesn't really, the stereotype and the stigma doesn't really affect me anymore. It doesn't bother me. Also, the timeline doesn't bother me. The ticking timeline that everyone seems to think there is doesn't affect me, because I know that I'm good enough and that, like, I like who I am and I like who I'm becoming and who Lily is becoming. And I think that's all I could really ask for. And I think that's really a beauty in that. I'm going to stop babbling about my kid now. You can tell that I'm a mom just by my babble about how much I love her. But like I said, I wouldn't trade this for the world as much as I'm stereotyped or whatever. The love and the bond is worth it, you know? And she'll always be like my best friend, my person, you know, and that's awesome. So, all right. Like I said, I'm going to stop babbling. If you guys want to talk to me about any of this stuff, or any of my other episodes that I've done on Lessons Learned on Radio Laurier here, I'm most active on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok. On Twitter and TikTok, it is Emelia Joyces. So EmeliaJoyces. And then on Instagram, it's just Emelia Joyce. If you want to message me on there, if you have any questions or just like want to talk about your perspective or anything like that, I'm happy to listen to you and talk with you about it. And I honestly love when people message me about anything because like, it's really cool to know that you can relate. So if you want to message me on any of those, that's cool. If you don't, whatever. I'm signing off now. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. I hope you're loving the spring weather because I love it so much. And I'm signing off now of Lessons Learned. This is Emelia Joyce. Bye, guys.